Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, our weekly Notre Dame football YouTube show that airs on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. We may be moving that around a little bit during spring practice. We don't have any plans to do that right now, but if we have days where we need to respond to news, we'll move the show around. But we appreciate you being here tonight. We're looking forward to answering your questions, talking some Notre Dame football, because spring football is just 3 days away. Notre Dame starts on Thursday morning, and spring weather is 0 days away. We had 70-some degree temperatures today. We were rocking the shorts, at least I was. And anyways, glad you're here with us. We're going to talk recruiting. We're going to talk spring football. We're going to talk NFL Combine. And Tyler's going to talk to you about notification bells and whistles and all the other things you need to know.
Yeah, that's right. We appreciate everyone tuning in and being with us here live. If you're watching us on replay, we appreciate you as well. Make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. Make sure you submit some comments and questions during the show, after the show. We appreciate the feedback. Brian Habermel, I see your question. We will get to that here shortly. If you are new to YouTube and the live chatting experience, make sure you've clicked through to YouTube, whether it's on a desktop or a mobile device or in the app. You need to click through. You can't be trying to chat to us through an embed somewhere, whether that's on social media or on InsideNDSports.com. You need to click through. And if you're on a desktop version, the chat box should be to the right-hand side. You should see that question that I mentioned there from Brian. If you're on a mobile device, you should see the chat box below our talking heads. And before I turn it back over to Eric, I wanted to mention our 30-day free trial available to InsideNDSports.com. Use the promo code NDYT. That'll get you access to everything we do over on InsideNDSports.com, our premium analysis, our recruiting coverage, lots of stuff happening here in March, and it should be an interesting time both for the football program on the field and off the field with recruiting. So you'll want to have access to all that. And if you have not subscribed to us previously, you can give us a 30-day free trial and check us out. There's a link to that promo code in the video description below, and that code is NDYT. If you click the link that's in the description, that should put the code in there for you. But if it didn't, make sure you put that in there, NDYT.
So we're taking stock in Notre Dame football as the Irish get ready to start the first of 15 spring practices. The first one is Thursday morning at the Indoor Athletic Complex, Irish Athletic Complex. I just changed the name of it to get rid of the Irish part for some reason. They have both indoor and outdoor fields at the facility. And then spring practice will take a pause for spring break, and then they'll restart it the following week after spring break. And then the wrap up to spring football, the 15th practice, is the Blue Gold game, April 20th at 1 o'clock Eastern time at Notre Dame Stadium. The game is on Peacock for those who are not boycotting the streaming service that NBC uses. So did we want to answer that quick question about the spring schedule, or do we want to launch into our...
We can go ahead and address that. Go ahead. The question from Brian Habermel is, has the full spring practice schedule been released yet?
It has been released to the media, and for some reason they have asked us not to share it with the public. And so you can kind of calculate when you think the days are. They don't practice on Easter weekend, and the start date, the restart date will be, I think, March 20th when they get back from spring break. So, but for whatever reason, they don't want that released to the public. Maybe they're trying to avoid people trying to get Tyler James's autographs after the open practices to the media.
Yeah, I requested that they not make that public so we don't get hounded. No, I think that is what it is, not for the media, but I think they do try to do as much as they can to prevent there being giant masses waiting for the players and taking some of their time, especially during spring when they have tight schedules. They got to get to in terms of their classes and stuff like that. So I think that's some of the quote unquote secrecy around the schedule. But we will let you know when we're out there, and we'll have that information for folks. So if you're paying attention to what we're doing, I think you will have a sense of when we're out there. But they will. I don't think you mentioned this, but they obviously won't be practicing during spring break, which starts next week. So this will be the first practice, and then they'll be off for over a week, and then
I did say that.
Okay.
I said they're hit the pause button, and then they'll come back and they'll restart it. But that's okay. You said it so much more eloquently.
Well, I was trying to welcome Rajon in the comments here, but it would not send my comment through. So I don't know what's going on there. So Rajon, I don't know if it sent it through or not, but it's telling me that there's an error that it occurred. So Rajon, I appreciate you saying hello. So my apologies for not getting through to you and me not listening to Eric as a result.
And we can also mention that Notre Dame Pro Day will be March 21st. And that will be at the IAC as well. And that is, it's like the combine, but it's just for the Notre Dame kids and it's not invitation only. So those guys like DJ Brown and Thomas Harper, who did not get invited to the combine, they get to perform. If you want to do some do-overs, if Audric Estime says, that's crazy, I didn't run a 4.71, I can run a 4.4.
Yeah.
Well, he can redo it at the Pro Day.
And yeah, just processing Brian's comment about that they used to make the schedule more public. I wonder if it has anything to do with the fact that now those guys can make money off of autographs too. So maybe they're encouraging you to go to one of the NIL signing opportunities that they may have. So that's another reason that they may not try to open as many doors as they used to for guys getting autographs.
Okay, so Thursday morning, we are going to head over to the IAC, and it'll be our first look at the early enrolled freshmen and also most of the transfers. There's a couple of them that won't enroll until June of the transfers, and then 15 of the freshmen are also on campus taking classes and participating in spring practice. So of that group, who are you most interested in tracking, Tyler, from that group?
Yeah, I think there's obvious answers, certainly, right?
There's definitely a duh answer. Riley Leonard, duh.
Right.
After Riley Leonard, who
after are you? Riley Leonard, I think the two that are the most interesting to me in terms of transfers are Chris Mitchell, the wide receiver, and Jordan Clark, the nickelback. I'm very bullish on Chris Mitchell and what he can do at Notre Dame. I'm really excited to see what he looks like in person and what sort of dynamic he brings to Notre Dame's offense. Jordan Clark, I'm more just curious on, like, what does he look like? I think it's too presumptuous to just say he's going to come in and replace Thomas Harper, and it's just like Thomas Harper was there. So what does he look like? How is he adapting? How can he impact Notre Dame's defense moving forward? And then let me throw it back to you on the transfers, and then we can talk some freshmen. Are there any other? Do you agree with my transfer answers? Are there any of the other guys that are really you're dying to get a look at?
So I put everybody in the same pot, but I certainly can break them out. I'm smart enough to do that. So I obviously had Riley Leonard first. I had Chris Mitchell second, of freshmen and transfers together. So Chris Mitchell,
okay,
because I want to see what kind of speed he has. I want to see if he can be that outside receiver that commands double teaming, to command safety help, that can run by at least some of the cornerbacks. So that's why he's number two. And then I had RJ Oben on my list as well, because he's a potential starter. And I want to see now, again, like with Javonte Jean-Baptiste last year, he didn't look like a game changer in spring practice. Mm-hmm. He did by the end of the season, but it took him a while to get there. So we may not see in spring RJ Oben flash what he will eventually be during the season. But I'm looking to see how complete he becomes besides just a pretty good pass rusher. I want to see if he can play the run and do other things.
Yeah, I think I didn't include Oban was on sort of my next tier below because mostly because I think we know what he has been at Duke, and it's not like he's playing in slouches at Duke. Like he's playing in ACC competition, and he's even played against Notre Dame. So I think we have a good sense of what he is, and I'm not sure that what he will become is something that will be apparent right away in spring. I think he even talked about how the spring might be a little bit of trial and error of seeing like how big do I need to be to add on some of these responsibilities that they'll be asking me to do as a strong side defensive end with more run stuffing responsibilities than just being more of a pass rush specialist. So I think long-term he's definitely someone that I want to track, but I don't know that I will be trying to get my eyes on him right away when we're looking at guys at practice on Thursday.
Well, thank God I'll be getting my eyes on him right away. So you guys won't miss out. Let's go to the freshmen then.
Yeah. So in terms of the freshmen, there's three that stand out to me. It's wide receiver Cam Williams, defensive end Bryce Young, and linebacker Kingston Viliamu-Asa. I think all those guys have a chance to carve out roles of some sort as freshmen. And I want to see sort of, does that look apparent right away? And if it doesn't, that's not the end of the world necessarily. But just to get a good sense of how those guys measure up, because I do think that they're very talented, among the best in the class, regardless of whether they're coming in January or in June. But those are the three that I really want to see how they stack up physically, speed-wise, and just what their sense of what they can do right away is. What about you?
Well, I pared my list down to three. I wrote down five, and then I pared it to three so that this isn't the only question we got to during the show, because I could have made it a lot longer than that.
Yeah, right.
So I also went in my order. I would have Kingston Viliamu-Asa number one.
Sure.
And I had Cam Williams number three. At number two of that group, and I did strongly consider Bryce Young and Kedron Young, anybody with the last name Young. But the guy I put on my list is CJ Carr, and I realize he's going to be the four-string quarterback. But I also think he's just such an intriguing talent, and I think that we've kind of taken him for granted a little bit because he – committed so early, he didn't provide a whole lot of drama with, oh, well, maybe I'll go take some more visits somewhere else. You know, he was patient through some assistant coaching changes. And I'm just really interested to see if on the field he looks like the guy that Notre Dame wanted, I guess, you know, above Dante Moore, even though they weren't in the same class.
Yeah, I think Carr was the only reason I didn't include Carr was that to me it's a little bit of a longer term thing there. Mm-hmm. He was on my next tier down, and so the way I did it, I had three at the top tier and then three more, and so CJ Carr would have been first there, then Micah Gilbert and Kedron Young were next on my list. But yeah, I mean, I definitely am curious to see what he looks like throwing. I mean, we did at least get a little bit of a look at him in a Notre Dame uniform during bowl prep. But obviously I think this will be a little bit more real for him now. And I'm curious, like how much will that have helped him just to been here a little bit earlier than the other guys, and how much more comfortable is he with things with that little extra experience?
So the next question is, there's obviously way more guys coming back, returnees,
yeah,
that we're interested in seeing. And I'll tell you, that was the list that got really long and that I disciplined myself and shaved to six guys. And if I need to go shorter than that, you can tell me.
We got an hour. We got an hour to talk about things. So okay, we're good.
Which returning players are you, Tyler, most interested in seeing their development from last season?
Yeah, so similar to what I did with the other one, I had sort of two tiers, and I had five in my first tier. Those five were left tackle Charles Jagusa, right tackle Tosh Baker, tight end Eli Raridan, linebacker Jalen Sneed, and linebacker Drake Bowen. How about you go through your list, and then let's talk about guys that we have the same, and then we can pull out guys that we didn't share.
Yeah. So I had just one tier because there were like 87 people in the second tier. But the ones I wrote down were Eli Reardon, tight
Okay.
end, linebacker Jalen Snead, safety Luke Talich, offensive tackle Emile Wagner, defensive end Josh Burnham, and linebacker slash pinch runner Drake Bowen. He scored in his second run of the season on a home run. Notre Dame, by the way, leads the nation in home runs in baseball right now. So.
All right, so let's talk about the three guys we both had then. Let's start with Drake Bowen. Drake, obviously, just the fact that he's balancing both sports is interesting, but I think he has a legit chance to be a starting linebacker for Notre Dame. So how is he progressing there? I thought it was interesting that Max Bolla said, whenever we interviewed him last a couple weeks ago, that he, even though Drake Bowen wasn't the guy that played a lot, he was someone that they were confident in. If he needed to go out there, if for some reason numbers got low enough that he needed to play, that they were confident in putting him out there. So that's a good sign for his trajectory. Just knowing Drake Bowen, I think him and Max Buller sound a little bit cut from the same cloth in terms of being sort of football guys and guys that are hard workers and getting after it. And so I'm very curious to see what Drake Bowen's progression is since the end of last season, and how he's been able to keep improving even while managing the baseball on top of it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if he's a starter. I'm curious to see which of the positions he ends up at. It seems like if he's going to be a starter, it makes sense that he would be the middle linebacker. So I would think he would be
Yes.
competing with Kingston Viliamuasa. And then I think Kahano Kia is more of a project in that area that they think will help them with depth and on special teams coming off a 2-year layoff from football. Because I think Jack Kaiser is the will, especially the way that Max Bolla talked about Jack Kaiser being one of the most improved players on the team this offseason, and went to great lengths to tell us how he had improved. I think that's kind of the natural fit there.
Yeah, and I think my perception is that Jack Kaiser wouldn't be a Mike unless they feel like Drake or Kingston can't do that. I think the or unless it's just like putting Jack at Mike and Jalen Snead or someone else at will linebacker is just a better overall combination than Jack at will and Drake at Mike or something like that. So there are going to be, I think, some interesting combinations there. And since we're talking about that, let's talk about Jalen Snead then as someone that we both had on our list. I don't know what Jalen Snead's ability to play linebacker is. I feel like we didn't get to see enough of that. I feel like the biggest impact he made was as a pass rusher. And so I'm very unsure about, okay, what does it look like with him playing a more traditional linebacker role? Is he a will? Is he a rover? Is he How different of a rover is he than Jack Kaiser was,
Everyone.
than Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was? So I think those are things that I'm very curious about where Jalen Snead is at and how they can use him moving forward.
Yeah, along those same lines, Tyler, I think, and I'll say Rajon too, just because I think that's like the coolest name ever. So I'll address him. But what I think I'm looking for is I know that Jalen Snead is an elite athlete. I want to see if he can be an elite linebacker.
Right.
And his story and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah's is similar, and it's also very dissimilar. They were guys that played multiple positions, both offensively and defensively, in high school. However, Jeremiah's really centered on him being a safety over everything else. And so he learned coverages. So when he moved up into the linebacker level, he understood all the things you needed to do to be really good in coverage. And he was fast enough to do it. Jalen Snead played quarterback out of them needing him to play quarterback. So that took a lot away from being a linebacker. And then he was never a traditional linebacker. He was either a pass rusher or you know, they would move him around in the different formations, but he really didn't work on coverages until the off season. I think he has a really good high school coach. I've had a chance to talk to him, and I think you probably have too, Tyler, about guy's a former pro wrestler, about Jalen's future, and he's a really smart kid. It was interesting to hear Max Bolla talk about him, and that Jalen's biggest challenge is kind of having the attention span to kind of absorb everything. Not that he isn't smart, because if you talk to him, you'll see how smart he is. But that attention span and being able to pick things up and incorporate those into his, you know, breathtaking athleticism, that's going to allow him to either become a linebacker, or he's just going to be a situational guy who's excellent at that. And so I think this is the telling spring for that.
All right. What's your curiosity with Eli Raritan?
Well, I always thought he was the highest ceiling tight end on Notre Dame's roster as he was a recruit. And, you know, once it got into the post Michael Mayer era, who was the guy that had the best chance to have a career? I don't know that parallel to him would be fair, but
yeah, that's a little bit high.
Kind of in approaching that stratosphere, the next real standout at tight end for Notre Dame in that lineage of all the really good tight ends. Obviously, Michael Mayer in the history is either at the top of that list or just below Ken McAfee, somewhere in there. But I think Eli still has a chance to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
6'7", just moves so well. He came in blocking better than I anticipated. It's too bad he had the two ACL tears. And I think this will be the first time we get a real look at who he can be, because he will be both over kind of the physical recovery and the mental recovery. And he was very open about the fact that this second ACL was a much bigger mental hurdle for him.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Especially with Mitchell Evans being hurt, the opportunities should be there for Eli Raritan. And I think we saw a little flash of that in the Sun Bowl, but I think there's more potential there for him. And like you said, the read on him has been like, if he reaches his potential and can stay healthy, he has the chance to be a very electric player at the tight end position, and a well-rounded one too. So I think where he's at will be an interesting thing to follow. So the two guys that weren't on your list, I believe that were on my list of five that I offered, were Charles Jagusaw and Tosh Baker. I think you had Emil Wagner. I asked Joe Alt down at the NFL Combine this past week.
Oh, you cheater.
Who he was excited for at offensive tackle. And those were the two he mentioned. Now, maybe he's just mentioning them because they were the guys who started in the Sun Bowl. So I don't want to read too much into the fact that he didn't mention Emil Wagner. But obviously, Tosh is someone that he's very familiar with as someone who has been on the roster for so long. But Charles replacing Joe in the starting lineup was interesting, too. So I'm very curious what those guys look like, especially Jagusaw, in terms of, okay, how much was he just sort of like trying to figure things out on the fly in the Sun Bowl? And how much
Ryan Harris loved him. Remember him? When
yeah.
He was on the podcast?
Woo. Yeah. And how much will that one game of experience really allow him to take the next step and solidify himself? I didn't think he played particularly well in the Sun Bowl, but I understand why there is a belief that he could get there at some point. And sooner it would be better than later for Notre Dame, because they obviously have huge holes at their tackle positions right now.
Yeah, I mean, Tosh and Emil, if I remember right, were pretty similarly ranked. Charles Jagusaw ranked ahead of them, but not by leaps and bounds. And I think that was more potential than being on an awful high school team in a real small class. I mean, it was heavyweight wrestling champion and stuff. But I remember how excited people were about Baker, with how far he came with very little football training. He was a Division One basketball prospect that flipped to football and then showed a lot of promise. But at Notre Dame, he's kind of been just kind of toiling in the background. And if you are a follower of Pro Football Focus, and we emphasize this isn't the end-all be-all evaluative tool, PFF is not a fan of Tosh Baker. It is a fan of Emile Wagner, but what I'm basing my gaga-ness about Emile Wagner is just what an amazing athlete he is, and a guy that really the biggest knock on him is just the process of getting to be tackle-sized, college tackle-sized. You know, when he was
right,
when he came on his visit, we had a picture of him standing next to Holden Stays. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he looked thinner than Holden Stays, and Holden wasn't a big tight end as a recruit either.
Right.
So it was like, okay. But yeah, I'm high on Emile Wagner. I'm really curious to see if he can. And if he doesn't, that means Tosh Baker is doing the job. I fully expect Charles Jagaza to be a starter, but I think it's going to be Baker or Wagner.
All right. Who else was on your list that I didn't include on mine besides Wagner? Okay. Was there someone else?
Yeah. Yes. I had Josh Burnham is okay. One of them. And I put him on my list because I think athletically he could challenge RJ Oben. You know, again, here's a guy that played a lot of different roles in high school.
Yeah.
None of which is the role he's playing now. He was a linebacker and he was a quarterback on a really good high school team. And he has embraced this move to defensive end. His body is big enough to put on that weight and still move really good. I know Al Golden is really excited. You kind of watch the coaches eyes light up when you ask them about individual players. Mm-hmm. And I think he tries not to give too much away, but with Josh Burnham, he gets pretty excited. And just talking to Josh, he seems like a guy that can handle it. So that's why he's on my list. And then the other guy I had was Luke Talich. And he was a guy, former Notre Dame safeties coach, Chris O'Leary was really high on. He was, you know, Luke is from Wyoming, and he won multiple state track and field championships. And I realize it's Wyoming. There's not a booming number of competitors, but his times are really good. It's hard to believe that he was a walk-on, and he did have scholarship offers. And he was 6'4" and probably in the 180s last fall. And Chris was always like, wait till he gets about 205, 210. Well, guess what he weighs now? And so I'm really eager to see how he moves and how he plays with that length, with that elite speed at that position, where there is at least an opening this spring with Rod Hurd II not enrolling until June.
Yeah, I think safety is a spot we'll get to a little bit later that I'm interested in. Adon Schuler was a guy that was on my next tier, just because I think there are going to be those opportunities for those guys. Luke missed the end of last season with a broken collarbone, and so didn't get to get out there in the bowl game when obviously plenty of guys got some extra experience that maybe didn't play during the season a ton. But yeah, special teams contributor, and when if he can make that next step to be pushing for playing time at the safety position, whether it's in a rotation or not, or maybe just a sign of what's to come down the future if Xavier Watts, well, not if Xavier Watts, if Rod Hurd is the other starter alongside Xavier Watts, because I don't think there's any question about what Xavier Watts is doing. So yeah, I agree with all those guys. I'll just list the guys that were on my next tier. Jaden okay. Thomas, Billy Shrouth, Boubacar yeah. Traore, yep. Christian Gray, and Adon Schuler was the one I already mentioned.
All those guys were on my larger list.
Yeah, so I think there's plenty of intriguing guys to be monitoring, and hope we get a good sense of where they're at throughout the spring.
Before we kind of continue on with the spring football preview, do we need to take any questions, or we want to wait for a little bit?
Jeffrey Stevens said, I think the ACLs were on different knees, but I have a 50-50 chance of being wrong slash right. I think he's talking about Eli Raritan there. It was the same knee, right?
Same knee.
Yeah. No. Here's another question from Jeffrey Stevens. And this is a reminder, if your name is not Jeffrey Stevens, you're allowed to ask questions too. But I think there's a question here from Ray John we'll get to as well. Jeffrey Stevens says, although it's not his primary role, how is Mike Denbrock's reputation as a tight ends coach? Will he have cred for the 2026 recruits at that position?
He will. He was a tight ends coach at Cincinnati. I think he was coaching receivers or tight ends at LSU. But Mike, as the offensive coordinator, works with all the position groups. During his time at Notre Dame, when he first got to Notre Dame, he was the tight ends coach. Then he moved over to receivers, wide receivers, and coached them until he left for Cincinnati. So he was a tight end himself. So I think his reputation is really good, and he's an excellent, excellent recruiter. So I don't think he will have any trouble with recruiting tight ends.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's history, regardless of who's been coaching tight ends in the last two decades, I think sort of speaks to itself. So I don't know that.
They got away with Scott Booker coaching them.
I don't know that Mike Denbrock has to be a tight end guru to get good tight ends to come to Notre Dame. I think he will need to use them to some extent. I think there was some discussion in the comments about how much 12 personnel Notre Dame would use with Mike Denbrock, and I can see that being shortened down, and I think that also will be dependent on Notre Dame's wide receiver group having the talent to replace a second tight end and have receivers that are worthy to be out there rather than the tight end. So I think that Mike Denbrock will do just fine. He's beyond just a tight ends coach. Like, he's a good recruiter. Like, he has a reputation of being a good recruiter, develops relationships well. And certainly if you have the product on the field to match that, things, especially at Notre Dame with tight end, it should be easier than other positions to recruit at for Notre Dame. Rajon said, what are you hearing about Bryce Young? Because it seems the sky is the limit.
In terms of his height, it is. He's 6'7" already. I was talking to Tom Lemming about him the other day, and Tom knows Bryant really well, his dad, and Bryant is from the Chicago area, and they've had a really good relationship over the years. And when Tom first gave stars to Bryce, he was almost charitable about it. And then he's a guy that's really grown into his body, and then the body has continued to grow. And all of a sudden, the skills that you were hoping would show up showed up this past season. And I'm excited because I think Notre Dame got in on him when he was not yet showing the full potential that he might reach. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he's on our lists. I would have him higher on my list if I thought he could beat out the guys at the top of that position group. But I'm excited about where his career is headed.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Like, with RJ Oben and Joshua Burnham ahead of him, the playing time could be limited, but maybe he's so good. He's like, you know what, Joshua Burnham, you go back to Viper. Like, maybe that happens. I don't know, but I wouldn't 100% rule that out. I don't think that's what will happen, but I am excited to see where Bryce Young is at and how he continues to elevate, because he has really just sort of taken off on a rocket ship the last year and a half or so. When he was at that camp that Notre Dame offered him, I didn't think he was necessarily a Notre Dame worthy offer. I didn't have the foresight that Notre Dame's coaching staff did. It helps when maybe it's a little bit easier to offer Bryant Young's kid than Joe Schmo's kid at that point in the recruitment. But Notre Dame looks pretty smart now for having pulled the trigger early for that offer. And he's really, really developed into quite the impressive defensive end. All right, Eric, one thing we wanted to talk about in terms of getting ready for the first spring practice was which position group is sort of hardest to judge from one practice. I know people want to know everything and anything that we've seen or could draw from one practice. Now, it is nice that we will get the full practice to get a sense for everything that happened during it.
They will not be in full pads, just to remind you.
Right. So what are the position groups that you're like, you know, we're going to see a full practice, but I'm not going to be able to tell you a lot about what's going to happen there.
Offensive line.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to see them engaged with the defensive line. We won't see them in pads. We won't see an offensive line coach that we can gauge by his amount of swearing, how they're doing. So I think that's the one where it's just going to be, we can watch them move, and but it's not going to tell us a whole lot.
Yeah, I would agree with the offensive line. The other one is linebackers. That's another thing. Like, tackling is so important to that position, and that's not something that they're going to be doing on the first day of spring practice. Though I am interested to see like how they're used, where what combinations are used, and how those guys look, and if they're making the right reads or decisions in instances they're put in. But I think it's a little bit hard to see what the linebackers are going to be like come September based on an early practice in the spring.
I think the position group that you get the best read on is probably wide receivers, because you get to see their speed and their moves. Now, they're used generally in drills where
they're advantageous.
They're at an advantage.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, especially if they draw Ben Morrison or, well, gosh, take your pick back there now. I mean, there's a lot of good corners, but yeah, wide receivers, I think, is where you start to see, and sometimes running backs, just to see their movement. Jadarian Price very early was a guy where you went, wow. What's ironic is in the one practice they had in 2020, who was the guy we were going goo-goo over on offense? A new guy.
Oh, new guy? I thought it was Kevin Austin.
It was of new guys, it was Xavier Watts.
Okay. I don't remember that. I remember Kevin. I just remember Kevin Austin was like making every catch imaginable. Yeah, but that's the only thing that stands out to me from that I can remember. Now, if I went back and read it, I'm sure I'm not doubting that you're right, but that didn't come back to my memory right away.
Xavier Watts is a wide receiver.
Rajon asked, will there be a GA working with tight ends?
Yes. Mike Denbrock mentioned that. I'm not sure who it is. Tyler, you might know because you followed those a little bit more, and we'll be able to drill down on that on Thursday. But Mike Denbrock mentioned in our talk with him 10 days ago that so that he could be a roving instructor, kind of offensive coordinator, that they would have a really good graduate assistant, and they had already made that hire.
Yeah, I'm not sure who that is off the top of my head. Kurt Rawlings is someone that's listed as a GA for Notre Dame. I don't know what his responsibilities are. But yeah, hopefully we can get there will be someone. I don't know that I can tell you who it will be.
We'll see on Thursday.
But yeah, we'll get some clarity on that for you, Rajon. But that's obviously something that Notre Dame will have. I mean, they have GAs usually working with every position, to be honest. It's not just specific to tight ends. There's usually GAs.
But I do think this will be an elevated grad assistant position given the responsibility that they'll have.
Sure. All right. In terms of positions, then, which of the position groups that are most intriguing to you this not just Thursday, but the entire spring?
So I went with four so that I wouldn't name them all. and I'll start with the one that's the hardest to judge in practice, offensive line. I think so much of what both Notre Dame's ceiling and floor is going to be determined by the offensive line. And I also am curious to see if Joe Rudolph, working with an experienced offensive coordinator and one that has offensive line coaching background, if that's going to be helpful in bringing that group along. My second group is quarterbacks. You know, there's a quarterback competition. I think I know how it's going to end up, but I'm interested in seeing all four quarterbacks and how they develop. wide receivers, it's such an important part of Notre Dame's offense evolving. And then obviously you got a unanimous All-American coming back at this position group on defense, but I think the safeties, who pairs with Xavier Watts, how deep of a rotation they have. I'm curious about all the young safeties. You have Rod Heard II, who will be here from Northwestern in June. He's actually here, but he can't participate in spring practice until he gets his degree. And then you've got Luke Talich, who's a sophomore, and then everybody else is either a redshirt freshman or a true freshman. And some of those guys aren't even here yet. There's a couple of those freshman safeties are coming in June.
Yeah, well, I think you picked the right groups because I had the same ones highlighted. I think it's I don't know if I would necessarily put them in the same order. I think safeties are the lowest there, just because you have one very clear answer at safety, but obviously plenty of questions around him. But I'm really wide receivers, I think, is the most interesting in the spring for me, just because I want to see, like, okay, how real are these new guys and how many of them can actually play? Like, how big of an impact can those transfers make? How much improvement will last year's wide receivers make? I think we'll – now maybe I'm foolish, but I think we'll have a pretty good sense of that exiting the spring. Whereas with the offensive line, I don't know where we're going to be at with the offensive line exiting the spring. How many people will have starting spots sort of lined up? What's going to get settled first, the interior offensive line or the offensive tackle positions? Maybe that all gets sorted out by mid to late April. Maybe that's something that goes into the fall. And so I think because of that, I would sort of switch those. I do think the offensive line is the biggest question mark going into the season that will determine the ceiling for this team, because I think that, not that I expected it to go terrible, but I think, like if you said, well, the offensive line really struggled this year, it's like, well, yeah, they basically everyone's trying new roles as a full-time starter this year. So I wouldn't be shocked by something like that. But obviously the talent that's in that room makes you believe that they can overcome that and be at least a decent unit, if not a very good unit moving forward. But they have a lot to prove as it comes to that. And here's a question from Irish fan. What is Rocco Spindler's status for spring practice? That was the next thing we were going to talk about, which players recovering from injury. Do we need to get updates later on this week? Do we have any update on Rocco Spindler, Eric?
Well, he was participating in winter workouts. Now, is he going to be fully cleared for spring? That was the original expectation, so we'll double check that on Thursday. But originally they said, that I remember asking, I'm the injury question guy, asking Marcus Freeman about that. And his expectation was that Rocco would fully participate. But sometimes we get a late reduction on some limitations and so forth. But that is my expectation going into Thursday. Now, did we want to go ahead and read off the other guys?
Who are the other guys that
I'm expecting Luke Talich to have recovered from his broken collarbone. I had a son who had one from football, and man, it was hard keeping him out of basketball. He broke it in football, but man, he wanted to get playing basketball and wanted to come back early. Aiden Gobira coming back from his ACL, Kevin Bauman coming back from his ACL. Where's Mitchell Evans with his recovery? Those are the ones that jumped out at me.
Yeah, I think that's everything. Rajon said Adon Schuler. Adon Schuler played in the Sun Bowl, so I think he's fine, unless there's something that happened in the Sun Bowl that I'm not remembering. So I'm expecting him to be active for Notre Dame. There's probably some of the obviously Riley Leonard, where he's at with his foot, as long as he's on schedule like he's supposed to be. maybe there's one of those freshmen
throwing t-shirts out at the women's game the other night.
Yeah, and maybe sometimes there's freshmen that come in and then they find something that they want to fix. So maybe there's a freshman that we're not remembering or haven't been made aware of that might be sitting out some practices early. But we'll obviously get all the answers to that on Thursday. All right, Eric, I don't think I have any more questions.
Okay.
So let's move on to the combine.
We're going to move on to the combine. So 8 Notre Dame players participated in the NFL combine in the last week. There was also a specialists part of the combine that was kind of separate. They don't do the 40-yard dash and the bench press and all that stuff. So Michael Vinson, the long snapper, Spencer Schrader, the place kicker, participated in that. But of the position group guys, it was quarterback Sam Hartman, running back Audric Estime, the two offensive tackles, Alton Fisher, defensive end Javonte Jean-Baptiste, linebackers Maris Leafau and J.D. Bertrand, very limited the latter, and then cornerback Kim Hart. So Bertrand did the least. He had a walking boot on when the linebackers did their on-field workouts, but he did do the bench press, did 23 reps at 225 pounds. So which Notre Dame players do you think helped themselves the most?
Yeah, I think Joe Alt is towards the top of my list there. Now, I don't know that he needed the most help, certainly. I think he probably entered the week as the number one offensive tackle in most people's minds. But if anyone
there are a lot of offensive tackles that are ranked as first-rounders, too.
Correct. And I think there has been some perception that maybe Joe Alt's athleticism isn't his greatest strength, and maybe that is true, but it's not really a weakness. And I think some of the testing that he did at the combine showed that. He ran a 5.05, a 40-yard dash, which tied for sixth among offensive linemen, and he's a big dude. And just sort of seeing him moving like that is impressive. 9'9" broad jump, that was tied for 12th. Showed some good movement and change of direction with the three cone with a 7.31, which was third overall for the offensive lineman. And he did 27 reps of bench, which is tied for 10th, which is pretty solid when you're talking about a guy with such long arms. It was interesting. I saw someone tweeting at Dane Brugler and Nate Tice, who do a podcast together for The Athletic. Nate Tice, Dane writes for The Athletic, Nate Tice writes for Yahoo Sports, doing draft stuff. And they had a comparison to Jonathan Ogden, who's a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens. Similarly sized as Joe Alt, Ogden did 30 reps on the bench, so a few more reps than Joe Alt, and had a 31-inch vertical, which is a few inches higher than Joe Alt. But if Joe Alt can have a Jonathan Ogden-type career, that would be certainly something that Joe Alt and his family can be very proud of. So I think what I saw from Joe Alt looked good. I'm certainly not the one that mattered in terms of the impressions that he made. I thought he fared pretty well. Javonte Jean-Baptiste did well, even though he was dealing with food poisoning from the night before going into his workout. He finished top 10 in all three of the events that he did.
Find out where he ate.
Yeah, no kidding. Top 10 in all three events that he did among defensive ends. He ran the 40 in 4.66 seconds. He had a vertical of 34.5 inches and a broad jump of 10'7". And then Cam Hart, I thought, did well. His 40-yard dash of 4.5 isn't great. It tied him for 20th among cornerbacks, but he's one of the bigger cornerbacks, so I think that isn't necessarily a huge concern. He was tied for 6th among corners in the broad jump with a 10'10" leap, and then he was tied for 8th out of 27 corners in the vertical leap with 39.5 inches. So I thought those three were the standouts from the combine for Notre Dame.
And when you're,
from my perspective,
when you're 6'3" and your vertical leap is 39.5 inches, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And your arms are 33 inches long. So his standing reach is higher than most. And then when you add 39.5 on top of that, well, Brian Kelly called it a catch radius, so I guess that would be a deflection radius for Cam Hart.
Okay, and then who do you think maybe didn't help themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to exclude Audric Estime from this list. He ran a 40 in 4.71 seconds, which was the worst of the running backs at the combine this year. I got to give credit to Drew Mentock from Irish Illustrated. He did some research here going back through past combines and drafts. He found that no running backs have run a 40-yard dash of the combine slower than 4.67 seconds and been drafted since 2015. So that's quite a long time there that hasn't happened. Now, there isn't a huge difference between Audric Estime's 4.71 and Kyren Williams' 4.65 that he ran at the combine. Kyren was drafted by the Rams in the fifth round in 2022. And then this past season in the NFL, he was the third leading rusher with 1,144 yards. So I don't think it's a huge concern for Audric Estime that he didn't run a great 40. I just don't think he necessarily helped him a ton. And that's just going to be something that hangs over him a little bit. But I think some people will be able to get past that. He showed his explosiveness with the 38-inch vertical and a 10'5" broad jump that was tied for fourth among the running backs in both of those categories. So what you expect from Audric Estime, I think, like, I don't know that everyone thought for sure that he would be the slowest and that it would be 4.7. That wasn't the best of weeks for Audric Estime. And then certainly you would have liked to see JD Bertrand get out there. Unfortunately, he had a boot on that foot. I thought he might have a chance to maybe surprise some people. And all Mayor Sliafau did was the 40, which, at least from my perspective, was a little disappointing. So we didn't get to really see some of that athleticism that may help him go higher on draft boards than maybe you would think based off of his production at the college level.
Okay. So I will point out that Kyren reran the 40 at Notre Dame's pro day and did lower it down to 4.54. Now, the people that judge those think it's more important that you do it at the combine than you do it at your pro day. They want you to, because they feel like it's the same for everybody, the same amount of pressure, the same conditions and so forth. But he did reduce that significantly. So I would imagine that Audric will rerun it at the pro day and try to get that time down.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. What were the highlights from the interviews with Hartman, Estime, Alt, and Fisher that you did?
Yeah. So I spent some time down there for the last four guys. I thought Hartman, when he was not having to answer questions about his hair, gave some interesting answers. He was asked about Jared Parker, and he sort of talked about how that they caught flack for last year and that they shared blame in that, both the wins and the losses, the good and the bad. Kind of typical Sam Hartman that he was like, he thought it was kind of surreal to see that Notre Dame went 9-3 in the regular season and there was such bad things being said about them at times. But maybe that's just that's probably a culture shock from Wake Forest to Notre Dame, if you ask me. Like, that's not surprising to us as people who cover Notre Dame on a daily basis. But one of the things that I thought was cool is that he has asked about Joe Alt. And then he's like, he told NFL teams that if someone says anything bad about Joe Alt, have them call me and I can prove them wrong. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Even though he only spent 1 year with Joe Alt, he has no doubts about how good he is as an offensive tackle. Not that I think a lot of people disagree with him, but I thought it was cool that he was willing to be so adamant about that. Audric Estime, as I'm sure most of you have seen by now, started singing Sweet Caroline upon request, as only Audric Estime could. I had said to some of the other Notre Dame reporters that were down there, I was like, you know, we were waiting for Audric. I was like, you know, this crowd isn't big enough that it should be, because I don't think people realize exactly what Audric Estime is going to do up there just in terms of being entertaining. And then I had no idea that he was going to end up singing. So that was pretty funny. Just a true, a guy that was such a blast to cover. And I wish him the best at the NFL level, because I think wherever he goes, as long as he has a modicum of success, he's going to probably be a fan favorite like he was for Notre Dame fans. Like I mentioned earlier, Joe Alt highlighted Charles Jagusa and Tosh Baker as guys that he's excited to see them play at the tackle positions next year. Blake Fisher was asked specifically about Charles and said he's going to be a great player. And so some more positive reviews for Charles Jagusaw. And then Blake was asked questions about playing left and right, which I thought was interesting because Blake's had kind of pushed back at that when asked about it at Notre Dame in terms of like how attractive that would be and how capable he'd be of doing that and maybe doing that if he returned next year. And now he's selling himself as, yeah, I can play left tackle. I was like, well, you did it for, I mean, all due respect, but he did it for part of one game against Florida State. He didn't get any questions about playing guard, which I thought might be, and still could be where Blake ends up at the NFL level. He does look good physically. He looked very trim and in very good shape. So I don't really know what to expect from Blake Fisher. He didn't necessarily meet expectations from my perspective at Notre Dame. I thought he had a higher ceiling than he maybe reached. So what can NFL teams get out of him? What do they see in him? Do they see that there's still some potential left that he hasn't quite scratched yet? So I think that's an interesting thing to watch if you're interested in how the Notre Dame guys do at the NFL level.
Do we want to hit some questions before we move on to the next?
Yeah, let me, since I've been doing the talking, Brendan McCarthy said, why opt out of the bowl game but then play in the Reese's Senior Day Bowl?
Because I'm not saying that I'm recommending it, but this would be the rationale, is that the bowl game is not going to be as consequential to your evaluation as an NFL prospect as the Senior Bowl would be, and the Senior Bowl practices leading up to the Senior Bowl game.
Yeah. At the Senior Bowl, you're doing things that the NFL coaches are asking you to do. Like, then they're there doing it. Whereas playing in a game, you've played in other games before. So it's not like you need that one more game to solidify where you're at moving forward. We got a Neil Ivy question that let's save to the very end, because I don't know how many people are interested in non-Notre Dame football on our Football Never Sleeps. Brendan McCarthy, we don't need to talk about Stephen A. Smith and Paul Feinbaum. That is their goal, is to have you talk about them. So that's why we're not going to do that. Let's get to some recruiting stuff here quickly, Eric.
I'll let you do the lightning round with recruiting.
Yeah. I won't even have you ask me questions. I'll just run through it all. Rivals released a new Rivals 250 last week for the 2025 class. Some commits that made the biggest jumps were Christopher Burgess. He's up to the number 39 overall. He moved up 23 spots. Owen Strebig, the offensive tackle, but moved up 22 spots, number 44 overall. The two that made the biggest drops were Ivan Taylor. He dropped down 21 spots to number 111 overall. And running back Daniel Anderson was at 205, and then he dropped out of the Rivals 250 completely. He fell from the number 16th running back to the number 19th running back. And he had a limited junior season due to some ankle injury issues. So I think that had something to do with him falling a little bit. In terms of targets, some guys made some big jumps. Dallas Golden, the cornerback target, moved up 62 spots to 147 overall. And wide receiver Derek Meadows jumped up 56 spots to number 64 overall as the number 9 wide receiver, a big-time target for Notre Dame that we would like to add to the class. Offensive tackle Will Black was given a 4-star despite receiving 5 stars from another recruiting service. I think 4 stars is more realistic evaluation of Will Black right now. I think he hasn't played the greatest competition so far in high school. He's a good athlete and has great size. He has a very high ceiling, but I'm not sure that he's quite at the elite level that maybe some others have pinned him at so far. Rivals has him as the number 40 offensive tackle in the 2025 class. Let's see. Mark Zachary put out his top 4 last week that included Notre Dame, Cincinnati, Michigan, and Florida. The biggest part of that news there is that Ohio State wasn't in the running, which is sort of what I've been hearing a little bit, that Michigan is maybe replaced Ohio State as the top competitor for Notre Dame. I still think that Notre Dame is the favorite there. I have a future cast in for him, but a clear delineation, at least right now, of where who Mark Zachary is considering in his recruitment. And the cornerback position has some interesting options beyond Mark Zachary and Dallas Golden, who are sort of like the top end guys that I think Notre Dame has the best chance of getting. Jameer Joseph scheduled an official visit for June. He's a Rivals 250 cornerback from New Jersey. Chuck McDonald's expected to visit in March. He's a Rivals 100 guy out of California. Tristan Haynes doesn't have a visit on the books quite yet, but has expressed an interest to visit. He's a Rivals 250 cornerback out of Oklahoma. And Devin Williams, interestingly enough, I sort of teased this last week, or I think it was on the podcast where I teased it. He committed to Auburn last week, but the door isn't totally closed there, I don't think, in terms of Notre Dame. So I shared some insight on that on our Heat Index on the Insider Lounge, which is our massive sort of breakdown position by position of where Notre Dame stands with its top remaining targets. So if you need and want more recruiting coverage, consider subscribing to InsideNDSports.com. Check us out over there, and the Heat Index should be able to guide you through what's left and ahead for Notre Dame in the 2025 class.
And if you want to eat chicken wings after reading the Heat Index, you'll know why.
Exactly.
Okay. Do we want to mention the playoff nugget here real quick?
Yeah. Go ahead and mention. I just wanted to make sure people saw the latest thing from Ross Dellinger. I'm not sure if people did. So I know we talked a little bit about it last week, but who knows where it's going to end up, but at least the latest of what's being discussed.
Yeah. So, you know, there's been all kinds of speculation about the playoff expanding before they even play one of them. And that would be from the 2026 playoff on, but, the 14 team playoff model, which would start in 2026, which I believe probably will become a reality. You know, a lot of people wonder, well, what does that mean for Notre Dame? And what Ross is reporting, and I think we back him up on this, is that Notre Dame would be protected to a certain extent. There would be 11 automatic qualifiers, from three from the SEC and the Big Ten each, two from the ACC and the Big 12 each, and then one from the Group of Five, leaving you three at-large spots. And as long as Notre Dame is top 14 or higher in the final college football playoff rankings, even if you have to drop down to grab automatic qualifiers from below the number 14 spot, Notre Dame would be protected and in the field as one of those three at-large spots. So number 14 is the magic number, which I think puts Notre Dame in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I think that's definitely notable and something that would be important if that makes the final draft of whatever becomes of the next playoff model that I'm sure will be tinkered with as soon as the ink dries on it, because that's the rate things are going these days. All right, before we get out of here, Eric, I wanted to throw in this question from Joseph Barrett. What was your impression of Coach Ivy's response regarding Olivia Miles' future at Notre Dame during the Louisville postgame press conference?
I didn't read a ton into it. I talked about it on our message board, on our Insider Lounge message board. Kind of the short version of that is, I think the question caught her off guard. Usually she would get a question like that during her midweek availability to the media to be asked out after this huge epic win. I don't think she was anticipating it. And I also think, you know, Olivia is a very private person in terms of her injury, in terms of a lot of other things. And Niel has been absolutely walking on eggshells this season to honor that. And I think she just didn't want to give a lot away. And I think the answer kind of came out off clunky. So I don't think there was anything definitive there. I'm not saying that she couldn't elect to transfer at some point. I'm not saying that she's absolutely staying at Notre Dame. But I will say this, when I talked to her this summer one-on-one, she was excited about playing with Hannah Hidalgo. And she's been extremely invested in this team in terms of practices and meetings. You know, she could say, hey, I'm busy. I got to study for a biology test or whatever. She has been really invested. So we'll see how it plays out. But Neil's answer to that in the press conference didn't change my opinion about what might or might not happen.
All right, cool. Glad we could address that here. I think that's going to do it for us. I will run through some things and let Eric chime in after me. Please make sure you subscribe to the channel here on YouTube. Hit the bell for reminders. You make sure you can know when we'll have content. We should have some video highlights from practice later this week. We plan to be back next Monday for our Football Never Sleeps again. Friday will probably be when we have our Inside Indy Sports podcast because of the practice on Thursday. So make note of that as well. One last plug for our free 30-day trial for new subscribers to InsideIndySports.com. Use promo code NDYT. And when you sign up to get free access to our premium analysis and recruiting coverage and special access to us over on the Insider Lounge, where we spend a lot of our time and an unhealthy amount of our time probably and share our inside information first. There's a link to sign up for that deal in the video description below. What do you want to say, Eric?
Football Never Sleeps is sponsored by Legacy Heating and Air. We appreciate them. And I did not use my furnace today.
Yeah.
And thanks everybody for your compliments, for your questions. And if you made fun of Tyler and I didn't see it, I thank you for that too. As long as it was.
Trust me, Eric, we'll go back after the show and look specifically for all the insults that he can find. And then we'll throw them at each other later, but definitely a lively chat today. I appreciate everyone chiming in. Even if you're not asking us questions, talking with each other, we're totally cool with that. So thank you for tuning in, especially for some of you that don't always get here live, and we will see you guys next week.